Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. Our next guest is a doctor who says he has two callings in life, medicine and poetry. Rafael Campo, a professor at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center and associate professor at Harvard Medical School, has spent decades as a poet, winning multiple awards, including the Guggenheim Fellowship and a National Poetry Series Award. His new book, out this year, is titled Comfort Measures Only. It's an anthology of his work from 1994 to 2016. When he sat down to talk with us about this, we started by asking him how poetry has changed the way he relates to patients.
Well, maybe a good place to start is to recognize that we are as much our physical bodies as we are our words, our language, our stories, our imagination. And so for me, that was always very present in my consciousness growing up. I was the child of immigrant parents, and they read poetry to me as a way to connect me to my heritage in many ways, I think, and to celebrate the place that we had arrived in here, the greatest country on earth. And so poetry became a wonderful medium for me, even at that very young age, to think about wounds and how we repair wounds, how we might heal from wounds in a kind of an imaginative or larger sense. So that's a little bit of how it came to be in my mind. And then, of course, when I got to medical school, I was immersed in the stories of my patients, and I recognized there that to be an effective healer, one had to be an effective communicator. One had to be able to bear witness to suffering. And that was in contrast to some of the, you know, messages and some of the modeling I had from my attending physicians.
Right, because I would think that on the one level, yes, you need to listen. You need to be immersed in those stories.
Yes.
But on the other hand, you need to distance yourself from what's happening because it's tragic what you're seeing a lot of the time. So how do you draw the line?
Yeah, it can be very painful. And I think what happens often in medical education and medical training and also in clinical practice is that we tend to distance ourselves too much because seeing suffering, because bearing witness to suffering can be so difficult, can be so painful. We avert our gaze. We look away. We focus on the data. We talk about, you know, what's the potassium and how many lymph nodes are positive on the CT scan. But we forget at times, I think, in our discomfort with what we are seeing, that we are caring for human beings, that we are taking care of individuals who have particular stories about what's happening inside their bodies. We're not just taking care of another case of breast cancer, another, you know, person with substance abuse disorder. We're taking care of a human being. And being present in that particular person's story, in that particular person's narrative, is essential to providing best care for them.
Mm. Do you think that not listening fully and not being present can really interfere with being able to understand what's going on medically with someone?
When we distance ourselves, when we remove ourselves from those experiences, we may not hear what the patient is actually telling us. The tendency to try to make every patient's experience of an illness fit our medical model of it, we can air. We can cause problems.
Yeah, I wonder if you could read a bit of your poetry for us. There's a poem called "Morbidity and Mortality Rounds." You've actually won an award for this poem. Mm-hmm. Could you read the beginning of that?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Morbidity and Mortality Rounds. Forgive me, body before me, for this. Forgive me for my bumbling hands, unschooled in how to touch. I meant to understand what fever was, not love. Forgive me for my stare, but when I look at you, I see myself laid bare. Forgive me, body, for what seems like calculation when I take a breath before I cut you with my knife, because the cancer has to be removed. Forgive me for not telling you, but I'm no poet. The poem goes on from there, but maybe that's a good place to stop for a moment.
Forgive me.
Yes.
Who should forgive?
forgive one another in the context of the experience of suffering. I think, you know, we sometimes tend to blame patients for their illnesses. We tend to blame them for, you know, inconveniencing us, for getting sick in the first place, for not following our medical advice and ending up in the hospital. So I think there's that aspect to, you know, to forgiveness as well. That, and also to understand our shared humanity in that sense, that we are all flawed human beings. We're all, none of us is perfect. None of us never makes a mistake. And so I think seeing each other's humanity in that sense is part of the forgiveness that the speaker in the poem is asking for, seeking.
You teach right now. You teach poetry.
Yes, yes.
At Harvard Medical School.
I do. I teach a couple of kinds of classes or courses that relate to narrative and to poetry. One is a reflective writing workshop where medical students and sometimes residents who work in the hospital come to gather, and we share poems and we do writing together. And that, I think, provides a kind of space for really, again, reflecting on the kinds of challenges we face in our work. And then I also teach in a couple of courses called The Developing Physician, which is focused on aspects of the work of healing that sometimes are thought of as unteachable. But it turns out stories can be a wonderful way into thinking about these kinds of issues.
Yeah, I like stories. I'm wondering, though, does that suggest that medical education is changing? Sounds like it, right?
Yes, yes. I'm very hopeful that, you know, medical education is indeed changing, and that we are responding, I think, as a profession to some of the challenges that we have in terms of, you know, the patients' view of us as healers. There's, I think, unfortunately, there's been a more antagonistic kind of view of doctors that's developed in recent years that relates to perhaps the kind of distancing that we're talking about. So this is a kind of response to that, yes.
Right. I also wonder if you think that sort of approach in medicine of looking only at a diagnosis as opposed to the whole patient, has it sort of led to mistrust in some of the things you're talking about in medicine, and also this search for alternative health treatments that people feel that they might be more listened to.
Yes, you know? I think you're right. Absolutely. That indeed we are seeing more and more patients leaving traditional allopathic medicine, Western medicine, and looking for perhaps that presence, that sense of I'm being heard in other disciplines, in acupuncture, in so-called complementary or alternative medicine practitioners. I think that is a factor, and we're seeing more and more patients migrating to other kinds of care. So this is a way perhaps of embracing also those traditions of healing as well, that through stories, through narratives, through poetry, we might actually learn about what some of these other traditions have to say about healing. And I think, you know, engage with our colleagues in other kinds of healing modalities to provide even better care for our patients.
In the book, you say the only way we can defy our own mortality is through acts of the imagination. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think that, you know, when we create a poem, when we create a painting, when we create a piece of music or a sculpture, those products of our imagination can live on after we're no longer here. And I think of the great works of literature that I always turn to when I feel despair, when I feel you know, at the end of the day I'm just exhausted and someone's not doing well, or those poems by Walt Whitman. I was just thinking about Whitman's great poem The Wound Dresser, where he talks about caring for the Civil War wounded, and that poem lives on. Whitman's not here anymore. Those soldiers are gone. They all are dead. But there's something about that poem that expresses their will to survive, their will to endure. And I read that poem now, and I can feel sustenance. I can feel, in a way, healed myself at the end of that, you know, really exhausting day where I've been in the midst of suffering and felt powerless. So that's something of what I mean when I say that in my book.
Is poetry, do you think, a way to help you process some of the tragedies?
It's a great question. Also, I think, you know, that there is a branch of medicine, in a sense, that an alternative modality of treating patients called poetry therapy. So there are practitioners of poetry therapy who actually use poetry to help patients deal with chronic illness, chronic pain in particular, also mental health conditions. And so yes, there are even some biomedical studies that show that reciting poetry, reading poetry, can ease symptoms, can help patients feel better. And there was a study published now, I guess maybe 15 years ago or so in JAMA, one of the most prestigious biomedical journals. And that study showed that in patients with rheumatoid arthritis and asthma who were given the opportunity to write expressively about their illnesses against a control group who just copied text out of Reader's Digest actually had reduction in their symptoms. So how that occurred is not understood entirely, but it did. It worked.
Yeah. Rafael Campo is a professor of medicine at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, an associate professor at Harvard Medical School, and a poet. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me again.
Stay with us. Coming up, Massachusetts Congressman Seth Moulton joins us in studio, and we'll take your calls. I'm Deborah Becker. This is Radio Boston.